Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Where is their money coming in from?
I guess they're doing quite well. They have 9,700 pharmacies, so they've got a lot of stores. I mean, you can't drive a block without saying, oh, there's another CVS right there.
You know what CVS stands for?
Convenience Value Store.
Consumer Value Store.
Whatever, I got it right.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you got it right.
Like I said, Convenience Value Store.
So let me go through this again. You cannot check out at the CVS.
No.
You can check in anytime you like, but you can never leave.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And we are live at Chatter at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest and Jennifer Street Northwest in the capital of the United States of America. We're open for breakfast starting at 7. Sometimes, like yesterday, we get a big crowd. Sometimes, like today, we get a small crowd, but they get gifts.
That's right.
They get gifts, and you can hear them. And if you come in, you can get gifts, too, because we recycle our gifts. People give us things. We give them out to people who come here. That's what would we
call
that?
Circle of life, Tony.
It is the circle of life.
Yes, absolutely.
Not that garbage you see on Broadway. This is the circle of life. I would like to read some letters. I have a picture of a leaf blower, and on the back from Greg Trieste in Dallas. Count me among those not offended by the phrase happy holidays. No matter what you celebrate, may your holidays be filled with ambient noise that drowns out all the things your family members are saying.
Yes.
The leaf blower, who we now need, by the way, as the leaves have begun to fall.
Love leaf blowers.
Marsha Potts sends us a happy Hanukkah card.
Oh,
you can send us happy anything. We have a happy holidays card here from the O'Connells to everyone at the show and the staff at Chatter. Peace and happiness through the holiday season. Thanks for the many hours of laughs and entertainment from two BU Bearcats and the little to whom they are related by parentage, which is nice. Binghamton people, we have a letter here. We have, oh, this is great. This is from Terry Kent, who is a lawyer for Lovato Law in Los Angeles, California.
All right.
And he writes, Dear Mr. Tony, I write to let you know that the attached complaint might be filed and that if the Tony Kornheiser Show wanted to file an amicus brief, or is it amicus or amicus?
Whichever.
It's friendly. In support, that would be much appreciated. And it's a district court. It says Lawrence O'Donnell, an individual plaintiff, versus the hammering a sound defendant. Plaintiff Lawrence O'Donnell makes the following allegations. Stop the hammering. Stop the hammering out there. Who's got a hammer? Where is it? Where's the hammer? Is it on the... Go up on the other floor. Somebody go up there and stop the hammering. Wherefore, plaintiff prays for judgment as follows. Stop the hammering.
I like
the fact that we got sent that.
You get a lot of mail from lawyers, and I think we should keep track of who they are
Stop
and where they are around the country.
Hammering.
Stop the hammering. From Clay Brian Francis from the College of Agricultural Sciences in Natural Resources at Texas Tech University.
All right.
And he's graduating, so everybody is cruising back to his favorite era. We are all invited on Saturday, December 16th in Lubbock.
Lubbock,
Texas, home of Buddy Holly.
That's right.
So we're all
I think
invited
I've ever
to
been
that.
In Lubbock.
Isn't Texas Tech in Lubbock?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm saying.
Oh, you've
never
been.
I've never been. No.
I think most people would describe it as the beginning of the end of the world. I think Lubbock is described pretty much that way. Let us get to the Steelers.
There goes the
Steelers
Lubbock market.
Beat the Bengals 23-20 last night. They came back from 17 down. Their kicker, Chris Boswell, now 24 for 24 against the Bengals. So if you're the Bengals, you don't want to see this guy because he never misses. I think I told you at the beginning of the year that I believe the Bengals and the Cardinals would take big falls. They're both 5-7. It's a rough game. Shazier hurt badly.
Yeah.
Vontaze Burfict carted off the field. Antonio Brown hit dirty. These are headshots.
Yeah.
These two teams.
Violent. Yes.
These two teams, and I would say that Pittsburgh's rough. Pittsburgh, Baltimore, too.
Yeah.
They have these rough games. I think Cincinnati has always been a dirty team.
It's different from Baltimore, Pittsburgh, which is just two physical teams knocking each other around.
I think they're sort of a dirty team.
Yeah, they raise it up a little.
What I want to, and I bring this up, in the context of the comments after the game by Juju Schuster and all of that, and the comments of Rob Gronkowski, who's justifiably suspended, obviously.
Should have been more.
I think it should have been two and argued down to one, just like the two fighters who didn't want to
this
play.
Was way worse than that, Tone.
You think so? Oh, I think it's just a pattern of lawlessness in the league.
No, those are two knuckleheads, you know, being knuckleheads. And you want to give them two, that would have been fine with me. This guy deliberately tried to hurt somebody.
Right.
He should go away for at least three to me, and I would have been happy, fine with four.
Okay, so I think the larger point here that I want to make is that what they always say, they're interviewed afterwards, and they go, that's not me. Yeah. That's not who I am. No, it is you.
You
just did this.
Watch the tape.
This is exactly who you are. Yeah. Yeah. And the problem with football is that if you are my age, or, and I don't know about Michael's age, you grew up with the celebration of these hits.
Violence.
The NFL printed out.
Jacked up.
Yeah, they sold tapes of this stuff. Yeah. This is what you were supposed to do.
Right.
Now we find out it is quite literally killing people.
Yeah.
And you ask people to pull back, but in high school and college, the sort of masculinity of football demands that you do. I don't know how you change this. You got an idea, you got a thought, you're a mom.
I think we're watching, we said this before, we're watching the beginning of the end of football as we know it.
I think you're right.
Right. And the hypocrisies along the way, I still laugh at least once on a Sunday, my husband and my son Colin, who only comes to see us because we have red zone package. which works for me. We will have it as long as it takes. it's hilarious to hear things like a pass interference. Really? Well, that's what you're supposed to be doing. You're supposed to be trying to stop the other guys, right? Or unnecessary roughness, right? What a ridiculous word to put on this. So it is crazy, but I was always happy my kids never wanted to play football. I never would let them play football. It's horrifying. And that game last night, for show prep, I was trying to watch the Steelers, the Caps, the Wizards. Very painful.
Many of which will not be in the show today.
Many of which will not be in the show today.
I watched the Ben Bradley documentary.
But
By the way, have I mentioned that Tory Clark and David Alter to Michael Gornheiser?
No, you hadn't mentioned that yet.
Okay, so they're here. So those are the voices you're hearing.
Welcome.
The,
go read some more mail.
Yeah. Go ahead.
The hit on Shazier in the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
If you watch the game, the Steelers were dreadful for well past the start of the
second
half.
Affected.
They were totally affected.
They just watched a teammate cart it off.
Yeah. He's not moving.
Yeah. That totally affected them, and then they came back in not so great a way.
I don't know what you do. I think this path is irreversible with one exception. If you take away helmets completely.
Yeah. That's what the rugby
people
say.
If you sort of make
say.
It like rugby, and then people will know, I would be killing myself. I can't do it.
Right.
I don't know where it goes. I don't think it's tomorrow, and I don't think it's next year, and I don't think it's 10 years. But it appears to be, David, on an irreversible course at this point.
I mean, certainly, you know, because of mothers. I think this is where it's going.
Because fathers don't care
and
about
fathers.
Their children.
No, father, I don't give
I mean, I watched some of that game last night in disgust, turning it away. And then I'm conflicted because I can still go on YouTube and watch the Sean Taylor tribute video where you have 3.5 minutes of just awesome hits.
Right.
And many of them are legal at the time. And I can still get amped up and celebrate those and then still turn off the game that's on last night.
Yeah, well, there is a difference between a physical hit that's legal and, you know, some of the stuff that's outside the lines. And the problem, as you mentioned, is that you can't stop somebody from coloring outside the lines. That's just kind of the nature of the game.
You can only penalize them.
And
as we
get more information about CTE, and now we're starting to, it seems like getting close to figuring out a way to diagnose CTE in living people. That's, to me, is the ball game. When living guys start getting CTE at 21 and saying, well, I'm not even going to play in the NFL.
If you put a helmet on someone's head, they're going to think they're protected. They're going to lead with their heads.
Yeah.
They're going to make the biggest impact possible. You try to outlaw helmet to helmet,
right.
But a lot of times you're not even trying to do helmet to helmet.
It's just
like the other helmet comes up,
or
the other helmet goes down, it just sort of happens. And now you have launched yourself like a missile.
You've committed.
And you know, is it a penalty? Sure, it's a penalty. But I have great sympathy for that play. Because that's a football play. You're not trying to do it. Anyway, in other football news that we did not talk about, I don't think we talked about the Giants yesterday. I'm sure we're going to talk to Jason Lock on floor about this
after,
in a while.
Right? I'm sure it happened after.
But yeah, show, but right? I mean,
well, we did mention when I was doing the newscast that as I was reading that McAdoo was still the head coach.
Well,
that changed rapidly.
Still had his key card.
I forgot to I forgot to get that into PTI yesterday because he was asked after the loss on Sunday, you still a coach? And he says, I'm going to be the coach till I take away my key card. And they took away the key card.
The key card doesn't work.
Yesterday. Yeah. And so John Mara,
vendor.
This annoyed me very much. And I don't know how you all felt about this. Mm-hmm. John Mara went up there and covered his behind, as far as I'm concerned, by firing Ben McAdoo and firing Jerry Reese, totally to me unnecessarily at this moment. Mm. They stink and they got to go. Right. But you didn't have to do it now. So it makes it look like they're paying the price for the eruption of fan support for Eli Manning.
Yeah, yeah.
And John Mara said, if you want to blame anybody, blame me, because I could have countermanded it and I didn't. And I did. I said, yes, I do blame you, and I think this is a terrible act that you're doing now. Because you cannot convince me that there's any reason to fire them today,
right,
absent this decision.
I agree.
The Eli Manning decision. Sure. And now if they put Eli Manning back, if I'm Eli Manning, I want out of there.
Well, he's going in.
Yeah, I want out of there at this point. And the thing that made it so much worse, and here's where Mara should have stepped in. If you want to bench Eli Manning, fine. And you want to look at your other quarterbacks, fine. Don't look at Geno Smith.
No, we don't need to look
you
at Geno Smith.
You look at Smith. We've seen Geno Smith. Yeah, yeah. You look at this kid Davis Webb.
See what you got.
You
sure.
See if you have anything sure. there at all. But right. Once you go to Geno Smith and you give him the whole game.
That's ridiculous.
This is nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah, ridiculous.
This is nonsense.
For somebody who knows next to nothing about football, the way in which it was handled. You don't need to know enough about football to know how spectacularly Eli has performed over the years. What a class act he is. Yeah. If you want him
nothing
to go
but
fine,
class in the way he went
him,
out.
But they were terrible. They could have been equally classy to him, and instead, the way they handled that was awful. Yeah. Absolutely awful.
Yeah. I think he deserves you going to him and say, how do you want to do this?
Yes, exactly.
Look at the response from players.
Sure, they know.
Players saying, you can't do this.
They know.
Great Giants players. Yeah. You can't do this to Eli Manning.
He's got two rings. That's enormous.
Okay. Related to that, and I always do this, I throw things out and I can't remember the names. There was some college coach over the weekend, kids had just won a game or just lost
Scott
a game.
Scott Frost,
and
UCF,
yeah,
left.
And he's leaving.
Yeah,
that's right.
Can't you wait a day?
Yeah, I know.
Can't you wait a day?
I don't think that he planned. I think that got out ahead of him.
But it happens all the time,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, sure. And you don't get to tell
the kids.
The
kids are in the locker room and the coach is anywhere around.
At least in his case, he did get to tell his players.
Yeah.
In the cases of other people, college and pro, Pat Riley.
Sure.
College and pro, they send an email.
All right.
Oh,
you can't. I couldn't do it in time.
Oh, you can't do
awful.
That. You have
awful.
To. You owe that to them.
Yes.
Exactly.
And you owe that to them to say thanks. Didn't Randy Edsall do that when he came to Maryland? He didn't tell his Connecticut players.
That's right. So I left them on the plane.
One of the reasons I was happy that he failed. And the other reason was that Randy Edsall stood out in front of the United States of America and said, I've always wanted this job. Mm-hmm. No, where you grew up, you wanted the Penn State job.
Right.
Everybody who grew up in the border inside Pennsylvania, that's the job they want. They want Penn State. They don't want Maryland.
You got to wear suits and ties because that's what we do here in Maryland.
Oh, really? Really? So I was not a fan
of
his.
So with both of these stories, with the Giants coaching situation, with the mistake with Eli, and with these illegal hits, where we are within the season at the 75% mark, do these stories go away because eventually the playoff push and then the playoffs make these go away?
For a while.
Sure. Pittsburgh stays in the news because Pittsburgh and New England are the two best teams in the AFC, and they look to
and
be
they're
going to
play each
court.
Other next to not next week, but the week after.
If you want to, go ahead.
No, it's a question. It was a football question.
What?
I love Pittsburgh, of course. I want my Steelers to do well. Do they look like a team that can beat New England right now?
I think they
have. They have on offense.
They were terrible yesterday, but
they have on offense. Two players, the likes of which New England doesn't have.
Yeah.
New England has a committee of wonderful running backs. They don't have Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah.
New England has a committee of wonderful small receivers. They do not have Antonio Brown. And Ben Roethlisberger he's got two also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yes, they can. I'm not saying they will, but they can. I wanted to make this mention of the Gronkowski thing.
Mm-hmm.
Gronkowski is apparently appealing this.
Right.
Okay, this is amazingly stupid for this reason.
Yeah.
If his appeal lasts the week and he's eligible to play against the Dolphins, and then he gets slammed with the suspension, as he will,
right?
Then he misses the Pittsburgh game.
Exactly.
What are you doing?
Take this week off against the JV.
Yeah, that's what you do. This is my greatest complaint against Michael Crabtree was not his antagonism and stupidity. It was, what are you doing to your teammates?
Yeah. Yeah.
What are you doing to them? Yeah. You came out here not to play a football game.
Right.
You came out here Jets and Sharks. You're going to rumble at the gym. What are you doing? I mean, for that alone, that's the worst part of it. Let me get out of here and bring in Jason Lockenfor, who actually knows something about football, when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the SeatGeek ad. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated and confusing, but there's a better way to buy, and that is with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. They need to say that. Get tickets to. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out, or need to find the perfect gift, because it's a new copy, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person. SeatGeek will get you close to the action for a great value. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to help you get the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek, S-E-A-T, your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. And that would mean you could get tickets to the Greg Garcia Show, Escape from Margaritaville.
That's right.
Best of all, listeners to this high-quality podcast will get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code Tony today. That is promo code Tony for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. Lonely heart.
Here's the message. Joe Brooks sends this in from Kinesis, New York. I'm unfamiliar with that town. I've attached the song Boxer and Clover. First song from my cousin's band, The Donnies, The Amies. Donnie, a.k.a. Donnie Danger Rat, is an Ashburn native who now lives in L.A. and does not listen to an old orange man discuss monkeys and worth consistently watching strike one and two cross the center of the plate. I told him about your show and that he should submit a song, and his response was what you would expect from a musician living in California. Nah, but if you want to, go ahead. You can find more of his band's music on Spotify, which I might add has the best reads. I love the show. Tell Nigel he's doing a fantastic job and keeps Liz's lead away from the board. Tell Michael we had snow last week, but it's been sunny and 60 this week.
So a little Donnie's Paul Simon hit to this, right?
It's nice. Jason Lockenfor of CBS Sports joins us now. There's a million things to talk about. I guess I would start with the firings in New York of McAdoo and Jerry Reese. And I guess I would ask you to tell me, my opinion is that John Mara was just covering his behind and that there was no need to fire these people right now. They could have waited. They're not going to get a new coach. They didn't have to do this. I felt this was John Mara. What do you think?
Oh, it's absolutely ownership. I mean, decisions like this are not made at a level beneath ownership, and there's no level that I know of above ownership. So, it's John's call. I found a few things, I guess, a little bit bizarre about this or didn't quite add up for me. I mean, they're saying it's not about Eli, but the timing is absolutely about Eli.
Sure it is. Sure it
is. If they lose this game of telephone that they awkwardly played last week, and frankly, that's on the owner. Eli's been your employee for 15 years. McAdoo's been in the building for three or whatever. Go call Eli, go set up a meeting with Eli, go talk to Eli yourself before those ownership meetings last Tuesday or Wednesday, and then you convey exactly what you want conveyed. He clearly was all about seeing other quarterbacks play, but they botched the optics of it, they botched the messaging of it, and then they found themselves boxed in a corner where now they've got home games coming up and everybody's ready to tear McAdoo's head off and everybody wants to see Eli play. And Geno Smith is still just Geno Smith, and Davis Webb is still a week or two away from being ready. So, you know, they fired those guys. I mean, look, the GM part, you want to start. I understand this idea that we don't want to interview people for jobs that aren't officially open yet. And now that job is officially open and there's people out of the league right now who are eligible to interview for those jobs, who you may want to get a head start in talking to, then, I get that. And everybody in the league pretty much knew that Jerry Reese was going to be fired anyway. The coaching part, for the PR optics of it, you want to get him out of there and let Spagnuolo, who the fans like a little more, take over for these meaningless games, then okay. But I found it a little bit dubious in talking out of both sides of their mouth about how and why this happened when it happened.
Me too. And if they go back to Eli Manning now, if I was Eli Manning, I'd say it's okay. You know, just look at anybody else you want to look at, and I'll be on my way.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I suspect Eli plays at least one more week, and, you know, they continue to get more practice time for Davis Webb, and then he starts, you know, a pretty good chunk of games here down the stretch.
And that's fair. Fine. That's fair. Look and see if you got anything.
This easily should have been handled the way we talked about a week ago, and what I conveyed to Giants people was, A, the owner needed to be there when this happened, and B, my other big quibble was, don't do this for Geno Smith. Right. Nobody's buying that. Right. Just wait until you think the kid has had enough backup reps to where you're going to play him, and then just play the kid. End the streak for Davis Webb. Don't end it for Geno Smith in a meaningless game against the Oakland Raiders and create all this havoc for no good reason, really.
But that's on the owner to me.
It's on the owner. It's all on the owner. Look, this was never Ben McAdoo's decision. There's no way in hell you think one morning Ben McAdoo got there, put the bro cream in his hair, pumped his chest up, marched in the mayor's office, said, hey, bro, just let you know, I'm sitting Eli this week. I really need to see Geno play on that crap field in Oakland. And then after that, I might play Davis Webb, or I might ask you for a raise. I don't know, but here's how it's going down, John. Like, no, that's not how it happens.
Okay. We've got Aldridge here, and talk to David as we open the show on the suspension of Rob Gronkowski. David believes it was too light. It should have been at least three.
At least three.
Maybe four. It's a one-game suspension. Jason, your feelings about that?
I've been all about a multi-game suspension because if you pay attention to how the math works here, then the player generally appeals because why wouldn't you? It's within your rights. It's collectively bargained. And oftentimes it saves you a lot of money. And maybe makes you available to play a game you were otherwise suspended for. So if you suspend him for two or three, then he's, you know, in all likelihood, even on appeal, going to sit for one. Although I do think there was a case years ago where somebody, it might have been Ed Reed, got two games kind of like haphazardly, and it ended up being less than just to a fine. But, you know, regardless, the general way it works is if they give you more than a game, you're going to sit a game on appeal, and I think he deserves to sit for a week. Now, maybe he still will, you know, the appeal hearing, maybe they just determine that, you know what, dude, we don't care that you've never done this before, and we don't care how it usually works. This was egregious. This was well beyond the pale, and, you know, you need to lose a game check, and your team needs to play without you for a week to get the message. Because this is, and I applaud what the league has done for the most part this year, which is when these things are not football plays, when they extend to a point where it's not really related to the game and it's just a clear and dirty cheap shot that could have an intent to injure, then you've got to do what you can do to try to eradicate that from the game. And if this was Vontaze Burfict, who I am not a fan of the way he plays, and I have made that very clear in my coverage of this league for a long time, And if it's somebody like him who does this, he's probably sitting, you know, he probably gets four, and it ends up sitting for at least two. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I understand that your past is a part of this, and if you have a reputation, and if you tend to do these things, it counts more against you. But that doesn't mean that, you know, somebody can't get two right off the bat, because it's flat out worthy of two. I don't care, you know, what Gronk's done in the past. When you do something this egregious, you should pay for it.
Thank you for bringing up Vontaze Burfict, because he is played on a team that is a dirty team for a long period of time. I think dirtier than Oakland. I think Cincinnati is the worst in that regard. Last night, there were a lot of plays that the NFL wants back. And they're the helmet-to-helmet plays between Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. That's a divisional game. It's a rivalry. I mean, I understand all of this. What is your – when you look at a game like that, what do you think they're thinking in New York City – because that can't be what the NFL wants to project on a solitary night game like Monday night.
No, I mean, look, they're going to – these two teams tend to bring out the worst in one another.
Yep.
Go back to the playoff game they played. not that long ago where Joey Porter is almost engaged in a physical altercation. Joey Porter, linebacker coach for the Pittsburgh Steelers, not Joey Porter, you know, number 55 lined up as a linebacker.
Right.
You know, was ready to go at it with Adam Jones on the field. And we had, you know, sort of chaos and guys being ejected and all kinds of nonsense. So am I shocked that in a playoff atmosphere in what was a do-or-die game for the Bengals to try to reclaim their season and what may have been the last meaningful game Marvin Lewis is going to coach there ever, that it tended to get down in the muck a little bit and guys bent the rules? And, you know, we saw, unfortunately, a lot of head-to-head contact and,
yes,
and leading with the helmet. No, I'm not. And, you know, anytime you have a game like that that's put in a window where it's the only thing in town, it's the only sporting event to watch on that night, it's going to get magnified and amplified, you know, if it does skew the wrong way. And I'm sure there were a lot of people in Park Avenue cringing, mm-hmm, while they watched some of those events last night. I can't say that it's entirely surprising. And, look, they have meetings before these games, and the league office is in contact with the officials, and they're told to look out for this and look out for that, and they, you know, they're given dossiers. They're well aware of who has grievances with who, you know, between those two teams and who tends to blur the lines and go over the lines. But in the heat of, you know, play, that there's nothing you can really do to stop it. These are, you know, full-speed collisions that are going to be a part of the game. It's unfortunate that so many of them last night included people striking other people in the head with their head.
And immediately saying, that's not me, that's not who I am, even though it is right. Who you are. And the NFL bears a certain responsibility in this regard. They make the Monday night schedule, and they want these two teams playing late in the year.
Right.
You know that. I know that. I mean, this is,
well, they skew.
It's a good draw.
There's a lot of divisional games down the stretch, which is part of how they keep everybody in the playoffs.
That's,
you know,
right.
I mean, that's, mm-hmm, part of the reason why there's some teams with 4 and 5 wins that haven't officially been eliminated yet, because they still have 3 or 4, you know, divisional games left to play. So I understand it from that standpoint. But, yeah, I think especially in this day and age, you probably want to be careful about some of these situations, and especially those two teams. You're right. It's been so bad, and it goes back so far, that maybe that's one you want to stuff in a 1 p.m. window with, you know, 9 other games being played,
yeah,
rather than have on a Monday night.
I'll give you an easy question. Who wins the AFC West?
I think the Carson, California, Superchargers. I've been big on those guys for a while, and I picked them to go to the playoffs, and I think there's a lot of talent there, and I was waiting for it to sort of manifest itself. And it took a good, you know, 6-7 weeks into the season before they figured out that, yeah, oh, wait, these games really count. And, yeah, this is it. We're playing in this 20,000-seat stadium all year, so we might as well get used to it. And, you know, the Chiefs fell back to earth and plummeted hard. And I mean, the Chargers haven't been, you know, a behemoth by any stretch. But, like, that game against Cleveland last week, that's a game early in the season. They may flat out find a way to lose. And the kicking situation, maybe that's stabilized now. We'll see. The kicker for the Chargers is like the drummer for Spinal Tap. It's spontaneously combust at any time. I think they figured it out. I really do. Rivers is... has played. Look, Rivers understands he doesn't have to be the man now. We can run the football. I don't have to throw 55 times every game, you know, every game for us to win. I don't have to force it into these windows early in games to set us back. He's not turning it over, and the defense is loaded. I mean, Casey Hayward, one of the top corners in the league. They've got the best pass rushing duo in the NFL, as far as I'm concerned. The D tackles, Mebane, they're better than a lot of people give them credit for. You know, that's a quality football team. And, you know, they get Kansas City in 2 weeks. Kansas City's got to play Oakland and then Sandy and then Carson. If they lose those two games, it's over.
Do you
like,
have...
They're on the outside looking in pretty much across the board, tiebreaker-wise. So give me the Chargers. I think they've got the best quarterback still, even though he's not what he was. I think that they've got a little mojo going for them right now. And they've got things, they can pack that defense, take it on the road, and Bosa and Ingram can mess your day up, mm-hmm, no matter who they're playing against, no matter which quarterback they're playing against.
Just find it amazing that Kansas City looks so good at the beginning. Kareem Hunt looks so good at the beginning. Alex Smith did too. And they scored 31 on Sunday. You got to win with 31.
It's the Jets.
You can't lose that game.
I mean, Alex Smith throws 4 touchdown passes. He finds a way to scramble for 75 yards at some point late in the game where they had already blown a couple of leads. to kind of give them a jolt, and it seemed like, okay, maybe they're finally going to shed this thing. And then the defense just utterly collapses. And the most troubling thing of all, if I'm a Chiefs fan, is, okay, it's one thing when you're not playing good offense, you're not playing good defense, and your special teams is so-so. It's another when you have multiple guys having literally mental meltdowns on the field.
300 penalties in the last 2 minutes of the game. They couldn't get off the field.
Where they gave the Jets 8 extra plays, allow them to kill a bunch of time off the clock, and force the Chiefs to use all their timeouts because of multiple penalties in the end zone. And then the third time around, like on the 2-point conversion, I'm sure everybody saw Marcus Peters. Like, that's a scene out of Slapshot. I thought he was going to come back out of the locker room wearing just a jock strap. You know, he's got, like, no game socks on. He's got half his uniform. He figured he'd been ejected for throwing that flag in the stands. Apparently, he wasn't. I mean, that's not an Andy Reid coach team. That looked like the Broncos, or that looked like the Giants. I mean, lack of institutional control. Control your own sidelines first. And, you know, that's ridiculous. They got a team security guy running back in the locker room to find Marcus Peters. He comes back. The game is still in the balance. The game is still being played. And he doesn't have the right uniform on. I mean, that's not what a professional football team does. And I don't think they're getting out of this, Tony. The quarterback change, I've been saying for weeks, that's not happening, and that's not going to solve the defensive problems anyway. Josh McCown still hung 38 points on them.
All right, plug your podcast for us, Jason.
Thanks, Tone. This week on the Be More Opinionated podcast, we'll be talking all about that big Ravens win. I got a crazy dog. You know what's going on.
Wow, the dog loves the accent.
He gets excited when we talk about the podcast.
That's right.
You can check us out at bmoshow.com. We got the Ravens and the Steelers coming up next week. We'll take you inside that matchup, and we'll surprise you with a guest or two, hon. Maybe it'll be Copper.
Thank you, Jason.
See you guys.
Jason Lockenfora, boys and girls. We'll take a break. Nigel will do news when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Okay, this is the Omaha Steaks read. If you're struggling to find the perfect gift for someone who has it all, the holidays are fast approaching. You order gifts for everyone on your list with just one click of the mouse. You get the perfect gift and you avoid the malls, the lines, and the crowds. Let me tell you about Omaha Steaks and how for only $49.99, you can get the family gift pack. When you go to omahasteaks.com and you enter the code TonyK in the search bar, at 75% off. Omaha Steaks is giving this exclusive savings to listeners of this particular high-quality podcast. Listen to everything you'll get. This is for less than $50. It's $49.99, so it's a penny less, but it's $50.
Well, that is less.
It's $50. For $50, you get 2 filet mignons, 2 top sirloins, 2 boneless pork chops, 4 boneless chicken breasts, 4 kielbasa sausages, 4 burgers, 4 potatoes au gratin, 4 caramel apple tartlets, a package of Omaha Steaks seasoning, and you'll get 4 additional kielbasa sausages free. That's $50. I mean, this is a real good deal.
A lot of meat, Tone.
It really is. It really is. Go to omahasteaks.com, hit my code, TonyK, in the search bar, get a 75% savings. It's a gift that's guaranteed to be a hit.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by David Caminetti. He did this song a few years back.
Now this
the band
like
is
you
called
Jewish.
David Killed the Giant.
Did you, David?
I did not.
David Killed the Giant.
I wasn't here. Wasn't me. It was not what, it wasn't me.
The song is called
How
New
Do
Horizon.
I Am.
This has that electronic feel. Sort of like this.
Sounds like you too.
Yeah, David's
like
right.
This. Michael? These songs are available at the end of the podcast in full. If people want to submit songs, how do they do it?
As always, you can email your music into the show at jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
And I can't help but notice that you're wearing Johnny O.
I am ducking the tuck today. And you can too by using promo code Bootsy. You can thank him after you get your holiday gifts.
20% off, right?
20% off your entire purchase.
That's really good. Really good. Okay, Nigel, you have news for us.
I do, Mr. Tony. You mentioned U2, and we talked around this room a while ago about how expensive the tickets were for the concert. I wonder what's more expensive, tickets to a U2 concert or actually driving through the toll lanes of I-66.
They opened this yesterday.
Yes.
They opened this yesterday. It's 10 miles.
Getting a lot of buzz.
Yes. 10 miles is what it is.
Yesterday, it hit a price of... It goes up depending on traffic and the peak times. As the more peak the time, the higher the price will be.
Is that sort of like the Uber surge,
yeah,
the surge pricing?
Yeah, yes. It feels like it. And the toll hit a high yesterday of $34.50, roughly $3.50 a mile.
$34.50 for 10 miles.
It broke 40 this morning.
It did?
And the variable pricing is to try and maintain a speed average of 45 mph on the highway.
Wow. This is an unbelievable sum of money for 10 miles.
Yes. Now, Michelle Holland, the spokeswoman for the VDOT.
What does she say?
She says, well, this is after yesterday. She says, well, this is the very first rush hour.
Sure.
Every express lane facility has a ramp-up period because it is such a major change. It'll probably take at least 3 months for us to be able to determine the typical traffic pattern and toll price pattern. In the meantime, we will have bankrupted everybody in Northern Virginia.
That's really...
Well, I want the demographics of who's using it. Now, saying during the break, I have heard that a lot of the people using it yesterday were carpooling. I don't know if that's true or not. But think about the kind of people who are coming into town and just desperately think they are the most important people in town. So high-priced lawyers, lobbyists, et cetera. If they're making $700 or $800 an hour, what's $35 to get
it? It just seems like an awful lot of money to go 10 miles. Yeah. An awful lot of money.
Should just have a guy with a gun in a bag.
Put it in here.
We'll see you tomorrow, Hank.
Wow. How valuable is their time?
Just under 40% were carpool riders. Real story, motorcyclists can ride for free.
Is that right? Were there a lot of motorcyclists there?
I don't know, but I think that could be a growth market for this area.
Yeah. For motorcycles.
I like it.
You could put the Hero World Challenge right here because that's a motorcycle. Did you see the Hero World Challenge motorcycle ads?
No.
Where it's a guy on a motorcycle and somebody's just singing, "We Ride."
Oh,
it
no,
is
I
like
didn't see that.
Really.
Is that the golf
powerful.
Tournament?
Yeah, it's really powerful. Anyway, go ahead.
We'll go to basketball, college basketball.
Oh, okay.
And I guess when we look back on the LiAngelo Ball era at UCLA. We'll talk about what a great influence he had on that program. LeVar Ball has pulled LiAngelo out of UCLA. Of course, he was suspended indefinitely over that little incident in China where he may have taken something from
his school.
He wasn't
the only one suspended.
No,
there were three kids.
Yes. But he is the only one who's been pulled out of the school. As LeVar Ball said yesterday, "I'm not sitting back and waiting. He wasn't punished this bad in China. We got back over here, and the consequences were even stiffer than China. I would like to point out that he was facing a 10-year prison sentence." Mm-hmm. So basically, they're in jail here, and he says, "I'm going to make him way better than the draft than UCLA ever could have." And I read some comment from somebody in the NBA. It wasn't quoted directly, but it was saying, "Yeah, he's not on anybody's draft board right now."
Okay, no. So there are two consequential things to talk about in this regard. One is he's got a younger kid who is pretty good,
LaMelo.
He's pretty good. Now, I don't know how good, but he's a D1 player.
He's got a chance.
And
this kid, no.
No, this kid has no chance. But the D1 kid may end up not being a college player at all,
maybe.
which is possible. The second thing is, and you would know this, I'm fuzzy on the details.
Mm-hmm.
Did the Lakers make a change in their policy? What is that?
This is not a big deal. I don't know what. This is because somebody writes a story for ESPN and they make it a big deal. They have a family room. And basically, you can go in if you're a reporter and you could go in the family room, you could talk to family people, members, friends. And I guess a lot of reporters would interview people in there. So basically, this is all about LeVar Ball because
this is 100%.
He would hold court in there, and I guess other people said, "Hey, you know, I don't get him out of here. We don't want to deal with this every night." So they're enforcing a rule that they already had in place. It's not to me. It does not. This does not rise to a First Amendment situation.
There,
you know?
No.
Is he in the room or not in the room?
Sometimes,
and did the
I
other
guess,
family members of other players say, "Get him out of
I
here"?
I guess sometimes he's
I can't
in the room.
Imagine he's a popular person.
Yeah, well,
he's annoying.
They want to sit there with their kids or whoever after a game, and they don't want 7,000 reporters in there. I sort of understand that.
I totally get this.
You know,
this is what Magic Johnson at some point is going to have to make a determination as to whether or not to keep Lonzo Ball, and one of the if he plays like this, and one of the factors is going to be. Is it worth it to have this guy around?
That's not going to factor at all.
You don't think at all?
No.
Okay.
No, this is about winning basketball games, Tom.
Seeing a couple of the kids interviewed, I'm always, they are not unaware of their father and his antics, right?
Lonzo.
And they seem to be very mature in saying, look, I just want to play basketball. He does what he does.
Yeah, Lonzo.
It's pretty remarkable on their part. But there's a great made-for-TV movie in this someday.
No, well, you just watch
the Menendez family.
You said it, I didn't.
That's what you're thinking.
I did not say that. Tory Clark did not say that.
Just look at the Foot Locker ad. He totally gets it.
Yes.
He understands.
It's a great ad.
It's a great ad.
Great ad. Foot Locker ad is a great ad.
The Wizards had a rough night last
not
night.
Not quite.
Their worst loss since a loss when they were the Baltimore Bullets in 1971. They lose by 47 points, 116-69 the final to the Utah Jazz. We've been talking about the bench productivity of late, Mr. Tony.
Yeah.
The bench score, let's see, 10-21, it's going to be about 27 points, 26
Look,
points.
All you need to know about this, when you lose this badly, I went back to see at what point in the game, I didn't pull a box score, but I think I'm reasonably certain about this.
Mm-hmm.
By the second minute of the third quarter, the Wizards were mathematically eliminated from the game in terms of...
way earlier than that, Tony.
No, but what I mean is that at that point, Utah had scored .70.
Yeah.
.70 had been scored then.
Mm-hmm.
So
no, this took about 7 minutes of my time. No, seriously, 7 minutes. You can tell when a team's just, they're not going to, they're not. It's not going to happen for them tonight.
Can I ask a really stupid question about that, though?
Because
I tried to watch.
Tom.
Well, this might be. How could they be that bad? How could they? And not a single person showed up.
Tired?
Are
they tired?
No. Well, I don't think they're tired. They're in Salt Lake
City. Said about the tolls, maybe? Yeah.
In the NBA, I am convinced of this. You have 82 games in a season in the NBA. Every NBA team is going to play five to seven games a year where no matter what they do, they're going to get stomped, curb stomped, like they did last night, because for whatever reason, you just don't have it. And then you're going to play 5 to 7 games where no matter what the other team does, you're going to curb stomp them. And this was one of those five to seven games for the Wizards. Not only did they not have it, they didn't care they didn't have it.
Right.
Because some nights you don't have it, but you still care and you defend.
And isn't that what Scott Brooks said afterwards? He says, usually they try.
Yeah.
They didn't even try.
No, they didn't try. No, literally 7 minutes in, I turned it off because I said they're not going
to
try tonight.
This game appeared to be the equivalent of Sonny Corleone taking it out on that guy with the trash can lid.
Yes.
It was the guy's
brother-in-law.
Yeah, brother-in-law.
Yes. Carlo.
Carlo, that's right.
Yeah, Carlo.
Did not end well for Carlo, as I recall.
No. Didn't end well for Sonny either.
For most
Well, that's true.
Sonny. Speaking of the toll booth.
Yeah. What else you got?
President Trump made a move yesterday to shrink a couple of national monuments in Utah, Bear's Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante. Wanted to shrink them by 1.1 million acres for Bear's Ears and 800,000 acres for the Grand Staircase Escalante.
One of the things he said in announcing this, and I think he was in Salt Lake City when he announced it, was he said, I'm a real estate developer, and there's millions and millions and millions of acreage that's out there that I think can be better used. So here's the question that I have. I am the product of the East Coast. I tend to believe that it's a good thing when you have protection of natural sites and so everybody can get to see them. Is it conceivable that we have overprotected these things, that we don't need as much not to turn it into oil fields, but is it conceivable that just conceptually that people in Washington, D.C., and this runs into the Roy Moore thing as well, that people in Washington, D.C., acting in what they think is the best interest of everybody, don't really understand the best interest of everybody. And I look at you, Tory, because you were in this position for so long.
I appreciate your efforts to get out of our Acela Corridor mindset, which I still think is a problem, right? So, somewhere between 30-38% of the people in this country still support Donald J. Trump, right? Which means we're missing something, right?
Right.
But in this case, this is a finite quantity that we have in terms of these lands and these precious natural resources.
Yes.
And I think you defend them to the end, to the death, much as possible.
I guess what I'm asking is, are they indeed precious natural resources? If people in that, and I don't know what percentage of people in that state are okay with this, that obviously the Secretary of the Interior was appointed. He's a guy who believes in less and less and less protection of these resources.
Yeah.
Maybe he's right. Maybe I'm wrong.
What I don't know is if they're even focused on the resource itself or the principle, where they want government out of people's lives.
Yeah, that's what you worry
about. Right?
Yeah.
That's what I worry about.
So you're not wrong, Tom.
I'm not wrong on this one.
No.
Okay.
No. But you are.
That's
what
I'm not wrong on.
Is there some? Is there a problem with developing land in this? I mean, the real estate developers really have a problem developing land in this country. Could you leave the forest alone for 10 seconds?
Well, I'm not sure.
Develop some other land.
I think we talked about a plan called Shadowland, hadn't we?
Yeah. There you go.
You know, sort of amusement park and things like that. Chocolate fountains.
Yes.
Debbie Gibson, one of the people who is claiming that.
Not that Debbie Gibson.
Not that Debbie Gibson. The other Debbie Gibson. Debbie Wesson Gibson, one of the women who is saying that she had some sort of relationship with Roy Moore when she was under 18, I guess, when she was 17.
It was consensual, and she was proud of it.
Went out of her way to say it was
and
consensual.
And she worked for him.
She said very much wore like a badge of honor that she dated him when she was 17.
It does.
And he
the
was
critical
34.
Factor in this is that the handwriting on what he sent to her is the exact same handwriting as the first woman who came out and showed that.
Yeah. And I guess Ms. Gibson initially wanted to sort of defend him or felt some sort of bond with him, but then when he came out and he started denying that he even knew who she was, she said, well, he's a liar. And so she's come out against him, and then she just revealed some further connection. It was this graduation card that he wrote to her, or allegedly wrote to her.
Yeah.
But as you said, the handwriting does seem
so here's
very
the
similar.
Question I have about this, and again, I'm glad that Tori is here, because Tori worked in politics for so long. It seems to me that the Roy Moore campaign has very skillfully cast this to the people inside Alabama as outside agitation.
Yep.
As don't you dare let them in the Acela corridor, don't you dare let them tell you how to run your state. That's, to me, it's a question of being a pedophile. But I'm not there. I don't live there. How do you do that? How skilled? It seems to me very skilled on the part of the Republican people running the campaign there.
Yeah, I don't know if I don't even know if they're Republicans. I assume they are, but I don't know if they are.
Right.
But it just speaks to how important the information environment is these days, right? And who fills it and who controls it. And they are almost using this as a positive, right? They're almost using it as a positive. It's an opportunity to say to the people of Alabama, get Washington out of our lives, get all these evil liberals out of our lives. I don't know if Roy Moore would have been running as strongly as he is if it weren't for this, which is just a horrible thing to consider.
71, in the latest poll, 71% of registered Republican voters there believe Roy Moore. I don't know.
Right.
So everybody's making this up? Everybody's making
people
this up.
Will are you know they allow themselves to be deluded if it gets to something they want and it
believe,
gets to
they
some,
believe what they want to believe
right
this is
but sort, I just
this
I
is
think
a
it's,
really depressing
I,
newscast
I think it's
Nigel,
very effective
I'm gonna pull it out
I think
way.
It's very effective to cast it in terms of stand up for what where we live and don't let people tell us what to do. And by the way, that is not the specifics of it are different, but that's the same in the District of Columbia. We give us the vote. We deserve to have a vote. Don't you tell us how to live and don't tax us without
they
representation.
They haven't given us that.
Nigel's getting worked up.
Well, no, but you know what I'm saying.
Did you see me tweet out last night?
I did.
It is an effective rally.
Yeah.
It is.
And it says something of the overall cynicism with which people treat
I know this
Washington.
Will be somewhat of an absurd comparison, but sort of the us against them, it reminds me Neil Young's song Southern Man, and shortly thereafter Lynyrd Skynyrd came out with Sweet Home Alabama that was like, look, Southern man don't need you around anyhow.
That's
right. It's just sort of like, don't tell us how to live our
lives. It's an absurd comparison, but it works.
Oh, there you go.
Do you have anything else, or are we good?
I do have one more story. I'd like to tell you this
story. Something funny. Somebody eaten by a python.
I would like to tell you the story of former Irish lawyer Desmond Moran.
Former
lawyer.
Okay,
he's still with us.
Okay.
But he was former high-flying lawyer, practiced law in Singapore, New York, all over the world. Really was on top of the world.
Not the Acela corridor.
No, not the Acela corridor.
The G5 corridor.
G5 corridor. Yes.
The Fennerin
Court. Get off that plane, Jimbo Fisher, because this guy needs it.
Desmond Moran, originally from Tipperary, and we all love the Tipperary song.
He dated sheep? Are sheep going to come into the story?
No, it's a long way from here.
Fell on hard times. Drugs and alcohol really sort of, destroyed his career to the point where a couple of years ago, he stumbled into a woman's apartment. Ooh. And as the woman says, she awoke to see the Irish-born lawyer standing in the doorway while wearing stockings and a G-string.
Mm. Really?
And she said, who are you? What are you doing in my apartment? That's when I started getting quite anxious, and I started screaming at him, and the children woke up. The woman said that she was shouting at Mr. Moran, but he didn't seem to respond. When she looked closely, that's when she realized he wasn't wearing trousers or a jacket. Mm. It appeared to be some sort of costume, and he went to the window and turned around. I could see his bottom. I think he had a G-string on. Fearful for her children's safety, she slammed Mr. Moran into a door several times and tried to force him out of the room. When he left, she ran off to another room with her children and called the police. Now, when the police arrived, they found Mr. Moran in the basement of that flat. He was still in the fishnet stockings and G-string. And when they interviewed him, he said, "I honestly didn't see a woman on the bed. I didn't see any children in the bed. I honestly thought it was a big panda bear on the bed, and that's what it looked like to me." Of course, he had been on crack cocaine for several days prior to that. So he says, so he's spending some time in jail for that.
Wow.
Where did you find this story?
What's the website on this?
Do you think solid it's for real? Because not often do you get fishnet stockings.
This is from News Europe.
G-string and a panda all in the same story.
Independent.
We're getting out of here on that note. We will come back.
The panda was not available.
Old Guy Radio, and I will talk at some length about the Ben Bradley documentary that I saw last night. I will ask David. Let me prepare David now.
Prepare me.
I am curious about one thing with the best team in basketball, the Golden State Warriors.
Uh-huh.
An alarming amount of huge comebacks and an alarming amount of technicals.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll ask you what that means when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the MeUndies ad. Every year, millions of people receive the least liked gift of all time, underwear, but we still give it to our family and our loved ones who just don't want it. Maybe it's not that underwear is the problem, it's the kind of underwear.
Kind of.
Okay, right. So let's talk about MeUndies, the underwear that makes for an amazing gift with its soft, flexible waistband, the fabric three times softer than cotton. MeUndies made underwear the perfect gift that everyone is going to love you for. It's a holiday miracle. This year, don't give underwear, give MeUndies. This holiday season, to get your exclusive 20% off the softest underwear and, again, socks, which I haven't seen, you will ever wear, free shipping and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go to MeUndies.com/TonyK. That's MeUndies.com/TonyK. It's a good, short ad. Makes me happy.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Old Guy Radio for the day. Little Richard Penny, like this. Macon, Georgia. 85 years old today. This is Good Golly, Miss Molly. It's great too. In terms of critical commentary, the only guy who can sing this almost as well as Little Richard is Sir Paul McCartney.
That's right.
Who revered, I mean, Lennon and McCartney revere.
Well, I think they toured. And Chuck Berry. They toured with Little Richard.
He opened for.
Yes. But
when they got hot.
Yes. Yes. And apparently Little Richard first heard the phrase "Good Golly Miss Molly" from some southern DJ named Jimmy Pennick and always loved the phrase and was like, "Well, I've got to work that into a song." And here you go.
God,
so there's Tutti Frutti, there's Good Golly Miss Molly, there's Rip It Up. What are some of the other songs?
Long Tall Sally?
Yeah.
Has there ever been a book or a movie done about the early era of rock and roll?
Oh, I'm sure there have been many of them.
Well, this is your wheelhouse.
I don't have anything specific, but I mean... You know, the Buddy Holly story.
Yeah, but I just mean
sort of about that, about all of them.
All of it.
Like a documentary would have to be.
Yeah, you know.
I'm sure there is, and I just don't know.
Chuck Berry.
Did you ever read Keith Richards' autobiography?
No.
Drugs Are Good for You is essentially the takeaway from that. But there's actually a lot of really interesting stuff in there about the early days of music.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
So, I wanted to get to this because about a week ago, I told you that for the third time in 10 days, I had received a bag on my porch with instructions to fill it with food for yet another canned food drive. And this was the Greg Cannon food drive. And I pointed that out and I said, you know, 3 and 10, you know, enough. I mean, I'm going to do it and I did it, but you want to stand up and say, okay, give me a break for a little while.
Yeah.
I got this very, very heartfelt email from Jorge Garayta, G-A-R-A-Y-T-A. I don't know how to pronounce it. I would take a shot at Garayta. And he said, "Tony, I'm a little for as long as you've been on the radio. I love to listen to your show. I adore the rants. We know a lot of people in common, mostly friends and golfing buddies at Columbia, where I'm not a member, but I've spent a great majority of my life there with friends. I'm 68 years old. The rant on Greg Gannon food drive hit a nerve on many fronts. First of all, Greg was my brother-in-law and a third-generation Washingtonian. Unfortunately, he died at age 55 11 years ago. Greg was the father of four girls, all grown now, and he and his family lived on Harrison Street, just behind WTTG, which, by the way, is about three blocks from where we're sitting right now.
Correct.
I think you might know that neighborhood. 30 years ago, he and his wife, Mo, and their four daughters decided that after Thanksgiving, it'd be a good time to canvass their neighborhood for extra cans of food not used during the holidays and donate them to the needy. That modest beginning has been responsible for collecting over 1.5 million cans to date. The area of Northwest D.C. and Southern Montgomery County is divided up into territories, and about 3,000 volunteers deliver the bags and collect them on the specified date, the first Saturday in December. My other brother-in-law, Rick Gannon, has taken the drive over since Greg's passing and is doing a great job. They expect to collect around 150,000 cans this time. This is done mostly through local Catholic parishes in the area because we happen to be and will certainly include anyone who wants to participate. It's a great couple of days where lots of young elementary and high school age children get to work with each other and their parents to provide a service for the less fortunate. My adult children have been doing this for a long time, and my 11 grandchildren are also enthusiastic participants. Tony, thanks for mentioning this on the podcast. I just wanted to explain the reason for the Whole Foods bags donated on your doorstep. By the way, no one has paid a single penny, and all donations go directly to this cause. I hope this explains the issue a long time little, who adds parenthetically, the show still stinks. Mm-hmm. So that is, you know, that is, as Paul Harvey would say, you know, the rest of the story. And I am, you know, I'm hit by that because now there's a person involved in that. And it's not that I don't think these are good things, because I do think they're good things. All I said was sort of enough. And in my particular case, and, you know, this happens as a public figure. In my particular case, I get a lot of emails and I get a lot of people saying, I'm involved in this cause. I think it'd be great if you helped us out. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be great if you emceed this event. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be great if you, you know, because you've done well and you need to do this. And each one of these people is sincere. There's 100 a year with their particular cause.
Sure.
And it's sort of like what you'd like to do is, can I just write a check? Can I do something that's not going to involve, well, you must get these things.
I think we all, well, I shouldn't say that. A lot of people.
Public figures get these
things.
Sure,
sure.
You know,
and
because.
And they're all important.
You can draw a crowd.
Sure.
I do this for dear friends.
Yeah.
I do it for dear friends, and I tell them I'm like a basketball player at Kentucky. I'm one and done.
Yeah.
But don't ask me next year.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I'll do it this one time, but it's dear friends.
Yeah, sure, sure.
You know,
sure.
Not for casual acquaintances or guys I met in an elevator.
Right. Right,
you know,
right.
So anyway.
I thought where you're going to go was the can of syrup on
the
table.
Yeah, I was going to say we've got these great cans of syrup.
Well, we didn't. I filled the bag myself, and one of the things I put in it, and I was giving these away today, was Guy's potato chips.
Yeah,
one of the things
that's
I put
nice.
In. Yeah, I put in some stuff. I put in, you know, Speedy a can of Speedy marinade, which is really good, and some tuna, and you know, some other things that'll last
the whole thing.
I like it when
kidney
those
bean
bags.
Soup.
Yeah, I like it when those bags appear because then it forces me to clean out my pantry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So and look.
And
for,
I never give old stuff.
I was just going to say, do you look for things that expired in 2011? Like
put some NyQuil from 2012 in there.
Would they like some Maggie's Farm rum?
Maggie's Farm rum.
Yeah.
I don't think that's good to give to kids.
No.
Anyway, so
okay.
let me. There was a story I wanted to tell, but my son told me not to tell this story about volunteerism.
He's
and
usually
so
pretty smart.
I'm going to.
But he gave a great 5-minute telling last night to Liz, who was laughing.
Well, it's just involves.
She's laughing.
I mean, what it involves essentially is try not to tell me about what you do with your life. That satisfies your charitable needs. Just do it. Mm-hmm. Don't involve me in it. And this was one of those, and Michael said, don't be specific. I want to be specific, but I won't.
I believe the listeners want you to be specific, too.
Exactly. The Ben Bradley documentary aired last night on HBO. It's a 90-minute documentary about someone who, if you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I love and hold very... very dear. Mm-hmm. I had the opportunity at one point to be in it, and it didn't work out, and I'm glad. I'm glad I would have had nothing to add to it. I loved the documentary. I loved the stuff with John Kennedy, John and Jackie. They were neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, John Kennedy decided he was running for president, and his neighbor was Ben Bradley. They were pals.
Mm-hmm.
The access to John Kennedy in these pictures is amazing. It's just amazing. You forget how young John Kennedy was when he was elected, and you forget how vibrant he was. And that stuff is in there, along with some passing references to John Kennedy's appetite, should we say?
Yeah.
I'll just use the word appetite.
Proclivities.
Sure.
You know, which wasn't just contained to his own house.
No.
Wasn't contained to his own house. There's a lot of stuff in Watergate on there. There's a lot of Janet Cook stuff. I was intimately aware of the Janet Cook stuff. There's a lot of Janet Cook stuff. about there. And one of the things, I'll get to the documentary in a second. But one of the people on screen is Ben Bradley Jr. And mm-hmm. I had forgotten that Ben Bradley Jr. is the product of Ben's first marriage, mm-hmm. not his second to Tony Bradley, and certainly not to Sally Quinn, his third marriage. And I've met Ben Bradley Jr. once, and he had a distinguished career, mostly with the Boston Globe. Mm-hmm. And I thought about this because my son had come over last night with Liz and with baby boy Bootsy, who I held for a brief, though significant amount of time before giving the baby to you.
Long enough for a few photos.
Right. Yeah. So that's photo opportunity.
Actual documentary evidence.
Photo opportunity. I wanted to get rid of him before he started to cry. I sensed he might do that.
So I have
this great memory of him laughing, smiling at me, and so that was nice.
So do you run like the option there? You like fake the handoff?
Liz gave me the baby, and I looked at Michael and I said, take this baby. It's time.
I love
Michael
it.
Michael cooked chicken, grilled, probably the last time we're going to grill for a long time because of the weather coming in. Sure. Anyway, seeing Ben Jr. on screen after they had left, I mean, I thought of the effect on your children when you're a public figure. Mm-hmm. And everything about you is shown, and everything about you is known, and all of your strengths and all of your weaknesses as well. And you can handle that. I mean, I can handle what people say about me. David, Tori, you've been public figures. You know mm-hmm. how this works. But there is an effect. And sometimes it's not great on your kids.
Correct.
Sometimes it's not great on your kids. Like my son, this could be tough. I mean, there are great benefits. You get to go places. You get to meet people. But then some guy says, your father's the worst human being I've ever, you know, and sometimes you do things that are bad. Mm-hmm. And while you can stand up and put that on your shoulders, I think it's hard, right? Do you ever feel that way? I mean, just it's oppressive.
If you want to read some of the mailbag, it gets oppressive pretty quickly.
I don't read the
mailbag. No, it's a little easier as you get older to handle that because you have a wider perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I mean, I think when you're a kid, I mean, my daughter, for example, I would say to her all the time, don't think of yourself as a child. Think of yourself as material. And she came not to like that.
She never had to ride the pony.
Right. No. She came to resent that.
Anyway, enter Shakespeare.
So to get to the Ben Bradley documentary, which I love very much, I will say this, that the highlight, I remember talking to one of the producers about this because I was called about it. And I said, it's not the same if people talk about Ben. How are you going to show? Ben is the most charismatic person I've ever met. Mm-hmm. Ben walked into a room. Ben's a lion. I mean, even at an advanced age, you've felt this, David.
Sure.
Ben walks down the hallway. So if some punk kid says he's lost it, your reaction is to punch him in his Adam's apple and knock him unconscious through that.
That's the way we feel when people say that about you, Tony.
Well, thank you for that. So, but Ben Bradley was a lion. Yeah. He had an enormous sex appeal. I think for both men and women,
sex appeal.
Well, he was a sexy
charismatic
guy. He's a charismatic guy. There's no question about this. And you felt, when he walked into the room you were in, your water receded just a little bit. He took over the room. He was that guy.
Yeah.
I mean, and how do you convey that just through still shots or even some moving pictures that you can't really do this? And you have people in this documentary who are incredibly accomplished people in the field of journalism, specifically Jim Lehrer, for one. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot. There's Richard Cohn, there's Bob Kaiser, there's Jim Lehrer, there's Tom Brokaw, mm-hmm. there's Jim Hoagland. These are big deal guys, and they're talking about Ben. But it's not the same as watching Ben. Mm-hmm. It's sort of not the same as that. For me, the you know, and they're all old now. I'm old now. They're old now. It's a bunch of old guys talking about a guy who now is an old guy, too, and departed at this point. For me, the greatest moment in the whole thing is David Remnick.
Yes.
Remnick is probably the youngest person in this thing. Remnick's got to be close to 60, mm-hmm. I would say. How old are you?
52.
And David's probably 5-6 years older than you mm-hmm. at this point. He's the editor of The New Yorker. And Remnick looks in the screen, and he's talking about seeing Ben at some summer event, you know, and they show up. Ben's genetics were amazing. When he was in his like mid-80s, he still looked, sure, you know, like he could win an arm wrestling event with you. Yes. And they show this picture of Ben on the screen with his great hair and his shirt. He's wearing a pair of shorts and his shirt is open all the way down to the middle of his chest. And he looks so incredibly robust. And Remnick looks in the mirror and he says, I have no doubt. I have no doubt that all Ben had to do was crook his little finger and my wife would have gone off. And that, for me, was the highlight of the documentary, because that's, you know, that's how I felt, that Ben Bradley was bigger and stronger and better and smarter and more courageous than the rest of us. Did you, well, how did you feel when you saw him?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think my view is a little different from yours. I obviously revered and respected Ben Bradley first and foremost as a journalist.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what I wanted to do with my life. And this is a guy who did it at the absolute highest level you could do it.
The best.
And came out of it. When you, I mean, I had that same respect, I guess, for Woodward and Bernstein, because they took a president down.
Well, that's,
they took him down.
They're number one on the board when they reveal number one in journalism.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
That Watergate, that's
yeah,
one.
They took him down. And the guy that let them take him down was Ben Bradley.
Yeah.
You know, so you had, there was absolutely a kind of reverence for him.
But what about your other worlds or your current worlds? How, you guys must experience some athletes or some coaches or somebody who fills a room that kind of way?
Certainly Jordan. Yeah. But, certainly Michael Jordan.
But this is our profession was Ben's profession. Mm-hmm. So for us,
Kelly Oubre.
For us, if Ben invited you into the office to talk to you, you were thrilled, you were honored.
Sure.
But Ben had no attention span.
No.
So after about 30 seconds of listening to you, Ben began to file his nails, which was the sign that you were done.
Yeah.
And right, you had to leave. And if Ben ever got up, No, you had to go. So the history of my relationship with Ben is pockmarked with 30 second things like that. Are we done here? Yeah. I guess we are.
I told you the story. He talked me out of going to the National. I've told you this story, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was the most.
Tell the other people who might not be me.
I was 26.
This is the Frank DeFord project.
Right. And you want to talk about now Frank DeFord?
Yes, he's got it too.
Because he was a big, tall guy,
6'5".
Yeah. So Frank DeFord, who I also, now, he, that's a totally different thing, because he was a writer.
That's right.
And that's what I think of myself to this day as a writer.
We all do.
And he was the best writer I ever. So he invited you down.
Best long-form guy.
Yeah, you go down to, we're in Atlanta. He said, come down to Atlanta, and you go down, and you're like, oh, my God. Frank DeFord wants to hire me, you know? And so I thought, I'm leaving. I'm going. Because he said, I want you to do this for us. And I went to the league meetings in Palm Desert, California, when I was covering the NBA for the Post. And the phone rang at 7 in the morning. And it was, please hold for Mr. Bradley.
Yeah, Benjamin Crown Shield Bradley.
And it was about a 90-second conversation, to your point. And it was basically, are you nuts leaving us for that? Paper's going to fold in a year. You can't leave us for them. It's not going to work. You got to stay with us. Yes, Mr. Bradley, I'll be staying at the Post.
Click.
And it did fold in a year.
Yeah, and it did fold in a year, and it stayed at the Post.
Yeah. I mean, he had, you can do these documentaries. I guess my point is, the personal charisma doesn't come through in the, because you don't, it's not like being in the room with him.
Yeah.
Being in the room with him was that special.
Ronald Reagan had that. And I know people who, 180 degrees in the other direction, politically, right, or ideologically, hated what he said, what he stood for, everything. And they would get in a room with him and would just melt. Just
I think Bill
melt.
Clinton and Barack Obama have that.
Say something.
I think they have it.
I've interviewed both of them. And Barack Obama's got incredible charisma.
Yeah.
He's not in the same league with Bill Clinton.
Clinton. I mean, he's you know, it's special when you see it.
Yeah.
I mean, Ben had it.
Yeah.
Well, it's special when you see it.
In this document,
because you see a lot of people who think they have it, and they don't have it. Yeah.
So I've only read about the documentary thus far, but I was interested, why so much, or why such an emphasis on the Janet Cook stuff, do you think?
Probably because that was the low point.
Biggest failure.
And that was the biggest
and
failure.
How they handled it moving forward from that. I thought that was incredibly interesting. When he looked at whoever the ombudsman was, and he's like, I'm going to give you, you're going to write and tell how
Bill
this
Green.
Happened. Yeah.
Do you know, I think I've told this story before, that how Ben knew about Janet Cook, how he became convinced on Janet Cook. Mm-hmm. On her resume, it said that she took a master's at the Sorbonne.
Mm-hmm.
Ben was fluent in French.
Mm-hmm.
Ben called her in and started speaking French.
It's nothing.
Ball game.
Yeah.
Ball game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. What I loved in that is that Mayor, I don't know if it was in the documentary, but Mayor Barry talking about when that happened, when the story first appeared and everyone
he's
thought
in
there
the
really
documentary.
Was.
Mary Barry's in
there really was. They thought the story was true.
Absolutely.
Mayor Barry is on the record saying, yes, we've identified the family. We're working with them. We're helping them.
To his everlasting credit, Courtland Malloy never believed it.
The first guy that said
we never believed it.
Called BS on it.
That's right. Courtland Malloy. And he's in it, too.
Was he the one when he's like, yeah, we're driving around.
That's right.
And it became apparent she didn't even know where we were in the city.
Courtland.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever else Courtland does, Courtland's got that.
Yeah,
he's got that. All right. Thank you for letting me reminisce. We will take a break. I did email. I texted Remnick last night, and I said you were the star of it. And I said, and you really think Esther would go? And he wrote me back, and he said, 100%. We will come back with emails and jingles. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And so it's been a year since my stupid song played on your podcast. And now each time I hear its awful strains, I stop and utter a loud gasp. For some men are known for their great deeds and acts of bravado, but no, oh no, not me. I have a piano.
Nice.
What is a man? What has he got? Good looks, talents, and skills. Were me, maybe not. The record shows I have none of those, but I have a piano.
Tony Beeson coming back with yet another great jingle. He says he hopes to make it to Chatter someday for breakfast.
Piano
it's
does
an
not
8-hour
rhyme
drive.
Bravado.
No.
No.
He points out, I still have
crushing
no talent.
The high notes.
I still do not know how to play the piano. However, I still have a piano, and I'm proud to represent the talentless contingent amongst the littles. Before we get in the mailbag, I want to thank Jason Lockenfor of CBS Sports for coming on the show. Thank our sponsors today, SeatGeek, Omaha Steaks, and MeUndies. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. Tori has a personal shout-out.
Shout-out to the Phantom Daughter who turns 21 today.
Hey, happy birthday.
Whose exams are going to take a serious hit this week because of that.
Tough time. We're very happy for her.
Yes. We're happy and amazed she made it to 21. Yep.
From Andres Montoya in Lima, Peru. Listening to Kip Sheeman's winter weather forecast, I had an epiphany. Kip is the Reginald of the weather. I say this with the utmost respect and in the most complimentary way possible. I hope Reginald doesn't take offense. Reginald, by the way,
2-1.
2-1?
Yes.
Wow.
So he's Jeff Ma, 2-1-2.
Right.
And Chuck, 3-3-1. So like, nobody took a beating except Carville. Carville was 0-4.
Yeah, tough.
Carville took a beating.
Yeah, so the monkey, the only one over 500 this weekend. And he's the only one 500 for the year,
No, Jeff Ma was over 500. It was amazing. Jeff Ma's two college picks ended up as pushes.
Is that right?
You think that people in Vegas don't know what they're doing? Both ended up as pushes. Wow. I mean, now, if you're Jeff Ma, you can bet and get an extra half point one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
But both of his games ended up as pushes. From Casey Kreutz. I hope it's pronounced right, C-R-E-U-T-Z, Kreutz or Kreutz, head coach men's bowling at the New Jersey Institute of Technology.
In JIT.
Yeah. This past weekend, my team was in a competition and ended up in a match against your Binghamton University Bearcats. This was a particularly hard weekend as one of my bowler's fathers passed away the night before. Your school and my school are not rivals, but more comrades. Students from your alma mater were so kind to my bowler in expressing condolences during this heated battle. Although your donation dollars may not go directly to the bowling program, I would love to hear about the Dr. Tony Kornheiser bowling alley one day. Know that your school is represented well by the students, and that even during tough times, I got a chuckle thinking about if you were here coaching or even bowling against my team. The PTI bowling party is Thursday night.
Yeah.
So it is my once a year chance to bowl.
There you go.
And I always bowl better I bowl three games. I always bowl better in the first game than the next.
Because you get tired. Yeah. The arm gives out. Yeah.
You know.
That's fairly typical, yeah.
Is that?
Oh, I think so for people who don't bowl regularly.
What's the number that you shoot?
I bowl regularly. I bowl once a year. I bowl regularly.
What's the number that you'll be shooting for?
120. 130. So if I could get 120 or 130, I'd be very proud.
So Vegas knows the line.
Rich Barajas in I don't think I can get it. Rich Barajas in El Paso, Texas. Did you see Tiger's post-round interview with Steve Sands where he referred to Steve as Sandsy? My immediate thought was, man, I hope Tony and the crew mercilessly mock Steve the next time he's on. Sandsy?
Tiger has a nickname for everyone.
Is that how that
And all of his shots, too.
Tiger was in a good mood. He was joking and stuff.
He shot three in the 60s.
I know, but, you know, Tiger doesn't usually
joke. He walked
joke.
Off of the course. He completed a tournament.
Yeah. Right.
He wasn't holding his back.
Right.
Wasn't slamming the trunk.
Right.
Kobe Gyasi. I'm 34-year-old little living in Leeds in the United Kingdom, and I had a double David Aldridge moment on Friday while watching TV. On one channel, Steve Sands was commentating on Tiger leading the Hero World Challenge. At the same time, on another channel, Howard Fineman was on the news discussing Mike Flynn's guilty plea. To top things off, Steve's appearance was on channel 401, and Howard's was on channel 104 with the news.
Ooh.
I know those guys, I shouted, pointing at the TV. Mr. Tony will love that they are on channels 401 and 104. The woman to whom I'm related by marriage did not share my overwhelming excitement. She simply looked at me, shook her head, and said, "That bloody podcast. Keep up the good work. Please don't read my name on the
air." What's his name?
Kobe.
Kobe Gyasi?
Kobe G-Y-A-S-I. Gyasi.
Loved him, The Usual Suspects.
Yeah, yeah.
Kobayashi.
Brendan Nolan in Palo Alto. The woman to whom I'm related to by Airbnb are traveling the country on 3-month nursing contract. She's traveling nurse, and since leaving Seattle, we've spent 13 weeks in Portland, Oregon. We're now in Palo Alto, California. We have no real plans for our adventure, and since it's my 33rd birthday on December 5th, is that today?
That is today.
I was hoping you would help me sell her on moving to D.C. by hooking me up with a part-time bartending gig at the for-profit restaurant Chatter. You've got it. You've got it. You can have it. I helped run Seattle's largest Irish pub called Kells in the iconic Pike Place Market, where they throw the fish. We've been there. For nearly 10 years, I've been bartending at each stop along the way. It's a win-win. At the very least, this email will hopefully help to get her to stop rolling her eyes every time I put on the podcast on her long drives between stops. Also, the winter weather forecast for Palo Alto was sunny and 65. That's it. That's the list. Tell Michael and Kip. Cheers. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear weight. Thanks so much for coming.
I have a piano. Lonely heart. Here's the message. I've been trying to send to you. You can say that you want me, all that you want, but you don't really want me. You're just holding on to the thought. Aren't you? My lonely heart.
Lonely heart. love.